Mark Twain is supposed to have said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. These stories, when we lift up and we finish, are just always rhyming in the present.
That's documentary filmmaker Ken Burns talking to the New York Times. You may have heard of him. He's a brand, and he sells American history.
Ken Burns and his brilliant team at Florentine Films has taken on one of the pillars of American culture.
Ken Burns captures an intimate story of victory, defeat, and determination.
For 10 years, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick have been working to tell the story of the
Vietnam. Whenever his films premiere, they're treated like special events, and his name pops up all over, like on billboards and murals, even on TV game shows.
All right, here's Ken Burns with a clue.
Hemingway gave his first son a middle name of Nicanor after a Spanish star of this arena sport.
What is bullfighting?
Correct.
For many people, even some of you listening, he's synonymous with historical documentaries. And it's understandable. Burns has built a 40-year career making films on subjects from the Brooklyn Bridge to his latest, a four-part series on Muhammad Ali. The titles of his multi-hour films read like entries in an encyclopedia. The Civil War
was fought in
the game of baseball
has often shown us who we are.
Jazz. Country music. All of this adds up to hundreds of hours of programming on a platform that calls itself one of the country's most trusted institutions. PBS, the Public Broadcasting Service. That's where many Americans turn for unbiased news, kids' programs, documentaries, and the arts, like Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and Downton Abbey.
My name is Grace Lee.
This is Grace Lee.
Hi, my name is Grace Lee.
Hi, my name is Grace Lee.
My name is Grace Lee, and I'm an independent filmmaker. That's a clip from one of my early films about my incredibly common Asian American name. My documentaries also explore American history and culture, and many of them have aired on PBS. But that's where any similarity between me and Ken Burns ends.
Join me, Tom Hanks, for our celebration of Ken Burns in Ken Burns, America's Storyteller.
For one, Tom Hanks has never introduced me as America's Storyteller. Well, he's never introduced me, period.
It's about building power in our community to win what is right.
Except the community. My films, like the one you're listening to here, explore topics like women of color transforming American politics and the history of anti-Asian racism. That's probably why the last couple of years make me question where we're headed as a country. Police killings of black people. Political divisions that prolong the pandemic. Voter suppression. Wildfires. And attacks against Asian elders. What's next? It turns out the Ford Foundation also wanted to know what was next. In the fall of 2020, they invited 40 thinkers, including me, to write provocations for the future about how to make the arts and media worlds more just and equitable. So I tackled a subject that's been on my mind for a long time. Why is PBS so white? And how exactly did it designate Ken Burns as America's storyteller? As if there's only room for one. So, welcome to Viewers Like Us, where we investigate the growing gap between PBS and its founding mission and ask, what would it take to restore the public to public television? I'm your host, Grace Lee. Now, I have nothing personal against Ken Burns. I admire his embrace of history. But he's taking up a lot of space on our public airwaves. His hundreds of hours of primetime programming are products of a system that for decades has prioritized his worldview at the expense of storytellers and audiences of color. PBS has enabled him, even as it goes against its very mission, to reflect a diversity of perspectives that speak to all of America. See, Congress created PBS in the late 1960s, another time the country was on fire. It aimed to unite a splintered America and offer an aspirational vision of who we could be.
Hi there! I'm here to tell you about the letter Z. That's the letter
As a child of Korean immigrants, I learned to read by watching Sesame Street. PBS was one of the few places I found opportunities when I began making films. That's why I've always believed in the mission of public television. But more than 50 years into its history, has PBS evolved to reflect America today? It's not like PBS is going to get rid of white supremacy, but it is a pillar institution, the kind that we look to when society feels like it's crumbling. In that essay I wrote for the Ford Foundation, I asked a lot of questions about why PBS has enabled one white male filmmaker to build an empire when it could share some of those resources more equitably. And again, I'm not saying public television doesn't make space for other voices.
I'm here today so the rest of this world hears our story.
I was a producer-director on two PBS series that came out in 2020. I'm proud of what we created. One of them covered 150 years of Asian American history, and we got 5 hours in prime time to tell it for the fastest growing demographic in the United States. Meanwhile, Ken Burns' exploration on author Ernest Hemingway, One Man, got 6 hours on the primetime schedule. His series on the American Buffalo gets 4 hours. Yes, I know they're endangered, but come on. As I wrote in my essay, when bison merit 80% of the airtime afforded to Asian American history, it calls into question not only the leadership of public television, but also who gets to tell these stories and why. I didn't think anything would happen because of the essay. But when Current, the trade magazine read by everyone in public media, reprinted it, it went viral. I got a lot of texts and emails from friends and total strangers thanking me for having the courage to call out systemic issues at PBS. Reporters asked the system's president and CEO, someone I'd never met, if she'd read it. Her name is Paula Kerger. She told the press she respectfully disagreed with my arguments and essentially implied that PBS's record on racial diversity was just fine. Okay, now if she hadn't said anything, I probably wouldn't be making a podcast. But like many institutions in America, from schools to the police to public health, everything is not fine. I knew I had to respond, and I didn't have to do it alone. A little background. During the shit show that was 2020, I was constantly texting my friends. We watched as media companies and our fellow filmmakers made empty solidarity statements with the Black Lives Matter movement. Like many industries in America, the documentary field is really white. The lack of access and opportunity is something we filmmakers of color know well.
There's an apartheid of access to funds. There's an apartheid of where the stories get told, who gets to tell which stories. There's a hierarchy of budgets as well that exists.
That's Michelle Stevenson. She heads one of the few Black-owned documentary production companies whose work shows up often on PBS. And here's filmmaker and Emerson College professor Maria Aggie Carter. For many years, she was an in-house producer at one of the best-known public television stations, WGBH in Boston.
We need to look at who is making the stories to understand how there has been basically one dominant narrative, which has been told from a white point of view in America. And that's not unique to PBS. It is typical of Hollywood. It is typical of history. It's typical of so many things.
And really, it's not just about a dominant white narrative. It's the system and the structure that keeps perpetuating all of it. That's why a group of us, including Maria and Michelle, published an open letter in March 2021 to PBS President and CEO Paula Kerger. Here's some of what we wrote.
Dear Ms. Kerger, as the leader of the public broadcasting system, you are responsible to commit an open and sustained public dialogue.
In the spirit of open, constructive, and honest fact-based communication, we invite you to share the following data with us as a starting point.
Of the top 25 production companies that have produced the most content for PBS over the past 10 years, how many of them are BIPOC-led versus white-led?
BIPOC means Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We asked PBS for numbers, like how many hours have been produced or directed by filmmakers of color as compared to white filmmakers over the past decade. We also asked for comparative breakdowns on spending for these programs and the makeup of PBS management staff. We called our group Beyond Inclusion. 140 filmmakers signed this letter. The press picked up on it too. Here's how NPR TV critic Eric Deggans reported the story.
Titled A Letter to PBS from Viewers Like Us, the missive was sent to PBS President Paula Kerger and the service's ombudsman on Tuesday. It was co-signed by several high-profile filmmakers, including...
Within a couple of weeks, over 700 people from all corners of the documentary world added their names, asking PBS to be transparent about the data we asked for. As we release this episode, we're still waiting. But none of us are going away, because this is urgent. Our social infrastructures are failing. We're living through climate catastrophes, an extended pandemic, the widest gap between rich and poor in our lifetimes. And we haven't even unpacked how racism has literally shaped everything in this country. It's time to reimagine all of our institutions, including the ones we hold most dear. I've put my own film projects on hold, because I need to know whether PBS is an institution I can still trust. But this isn't just about me. It's also about the next generation of storytellers. As I wrote in my essay, we need more than one lens on America's stories. That includes the story we're documenting here, in this podcast. So I ask Akintunde Ahmad to join me on this journey.
I go by Tunde.
Tunde is a reporter and filmmaker.
I'm 25 years old and a recent Columbia Journalism School grad. I'm originally from Oakland, California, and I'm really at the start of my career in making documentaries.
He's bringing a different perspective that I hope keeps my own biases in check.
Hey, Grace, how are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for inviting me on here.
Now, I know you've done investigative articles on criminal justice, policing, and the media, but before we even try to understand the inner workings of PBS, I want to know, do you even watch it?
And that's a really fair question. I feel like I actually am in rare company amongst my peers and that I do watch a bit of PBS. I mean, I mainly watch films made by people I know or if I know someone that's featured in them. And so if the subject matter feels relevant to me, like, say, for example, Stanley Nelson's Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution.
The thing that led to the Panthers was what we were seeing on television every day with attack dogs. Fire hoses.
Being from Oakland and having a special attachment to that particular history of the Black Panther Party. So yeah, I do turn to PBS for some of my programming.
Did you see that Ken Burns has a new series on Muhammad Ali?
How could I not? Yes, I did.
Yeah. Yes, 8 hours. Now, it makes sense to me that Ali gets more hours than Hemingway or The Buffalo. He is the greatest.
I mean, I can't argue with you there, but I do have to ask the question, in 2021, why is Ken Burns the best person to tell Ali's story? I really do feel like he missed an opportunity to hire an African-American director or co-director who might bring some different perspectives to the mix.
You mean instead of his daughter and son-in-law? I mean, I think they're the writers and co-directors. Yeah, Sarah Burns and David McMahon.
So maybe not just one opportunity missed, but potentially two or three to bring more diversity to the room.
The documentary world is so different now than when I was starting out. There's so many commercial outlets to build your career. Is public television even relevant to you and your future?
Honestly, I think that's where we're trying to find out. When I originally came across the Beyond Inclusion letter and I saw how many filmmakers signed on, it brought up a lot of different questions for me. Like, do I really want to start my career in a place and in a system that may not fully support me in my work? I think that's part of the reason why I was so eager to jump onto this project and actually do some of the digging into the inner workings of PBS so I can actually learn how it serves or fails to serve the public. In future episodes, you'll be hearing a lot more from me, but until then, I'm going to be doing what journalists and doc filmmakers do, asking a lot of questions and hopefully getting some answers.
Mark Twain is supposed to have said, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes." These stories, when we lift up and we finish, are just always rhyming in the present.
These questions Tunde and I are asking, they're how we break the rhyme of history. We can learn from the past, but we shouldn't get stuck in it. If we as a society continue uplifting these white dominant narratives, of who we are and where we've been, our story will never change. And if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that we desperately need our story to change. In the next episode, the president of PBS arranges a sit-down with me and the rest of my colleagues in Beyond Inclusion.
I have to say, Grace, I've wanted to talk to you for a long time. It is particularly appropriate that we're having the discussion this week, one day after we marked the one-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd.
This show is produced by Studio To Be and Lili Films.
Our executive producers, Joaquin Alvarado, Kenny Keita, and I, Grace Lee, created this podcast. Akintunde Ahmad is our investigative reporter. Linda Miller leads our investigative research, and Andy Becker is our fact checker. Cheryl Duvall is our story editor. Suzanne Reber, our consulting editor, and Olivia Almer produces the show. Claudia Meza does our audio mixing, composition, and sound design. Thanks to her for editorial support, too. Chloe Barron, Sonia Paul, and Marina Castellanos handle additional production. Thanks also to the Ford Foundation Just Films and the MacArthur Foundation. And a very special thanks to Beyond Inclusion, whose organizing work this podcast builds upon. You can hear Viewers Like Us on all your favorite podcast apps.
If you'd like to support our story, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps more people find us. We'd love to hear from you. Connect with us on our website, viewerslikeus.com.